All right, let's dive into this one. Does planet Earth actually need saving? We're going to be looking at this article from the Spiritual Sikh website. It's titled, "Does Planet Earth Need Saving?" No, but mankind needs to save mankind from itself. So get ready. This one might kind of flip some of your ideas about environmentalism on their head.
Yeah, the thing that really caught my eye right off the bat is how this article, like, it turns the whole conversation around. You know, it's not saying don't care about the environment, but it's arguing that just focusing on saving the planet, like, that might not be the whole story. It's almost like, you know, we're treating the symptoms but not really getting at the root cause.
That's a really good way to put it. And the article kind of goes deep into human nature too, saying that we're not just physical beings, but also souls and spirits looking for connection and meaning. What do you think about that?
Well, it makes you think, doesn't it? I mean, it really challenges that traditional way of looking at humans as just, you know, material beings. We often kind of operate on autopilot, right? Driven by our instincts and, you know, that desire for comfort and security and all that. But this article's saying maybe there's something more, you know, like a deeper part of us that wants purpose and connection that goes beyond just the stuff we can see and touch.
Okay, so if we're all searching for meaning and connection, why are we so often destructive? I mean, not just to the environment, but to each other too. The article seems to be saying that, like, tapping into this higher consciousness, as they call it, is the key to breaking those self-destructive habits.
Yeah, that's the idea. And to do that, they lay out this five-step path for, like, inner exploration.
Oh, wow.
Well, the first one they talk about is self-reflection, basically looking at your values and priorities. Like asking yourself, are the things you're doing every day matching up with what you truly believe in? Or are you just kind of caught up in chasing external validation or possessions that don't really fulfill you?
You know, that's a good question to ask yourself. It's easy to just get caught up in the day-to-day and not really think about, like, where you're headed.
Totally. And that's where step two comes in, which is mindfulness practices. And this isn't just about, you know, like finding a quiet moment in a crazy day. It's about actually becoming more aware of your thoughts and your emotions. Think about it. What if you could observe your reactions without judging them? You know, really understand what drives your behavior. Wouldn't that change how you interact with the world?
Yeah, it almost sounds like you're rewiring your brain, you know?
Yeah, it's a big shift. And then they get to step three, which is emotional intelligence. So if mindfulness is about, like, seeing your emotions clearly, emotional intelligence is about understanding how those emotions influence what you do. Like, let's say you're feeling super stressed out. Do you just lash out at people? Or do you have the self-awareness to be like, okay, this is stress talking. I need to find a better way to deal with this.
I mean, that makes me think about all the conflicts we see, right? Like arguments between people, political tension, all that. Could it be that a lack of emotional intelligence is like fueling some of those conflicts?
That's a great point. I mean, imagine if world leaders actually practiced emotional intelligence, approaching disagreements with empathy instead of just getting defensive and aggressive. I mean, it might sound idealistic, but it's an interesting thought, right?
It totally challenges the way we usually think about power and conflict. And it kind of makes you wonder if maybe changing ourselves from the inside is just as important as all the political stuff when it comes to creating a more peaceful world. But how do we actually develop this emotional intelligence, like in ourselves and as a society?
Well, that's where step four comes in spiritual inquiry. And this doesn't have to mean, you know, following a specific religion or anything like that. It's more about exploring philosophical and spiritual ideas, you know, looking at different perspectives on what life means, where we fit in the universe, all that big stuff.
So it's less about finding the right answer and more about opening your mind and being able to see things from other people's points of view.
Exactly. It's that openness that helps us become more compassionate and understanding, you know. It's about realizing that we don't have it all figured out and that there's always something to learn from other people.
And the last step the article talks about is community connection. It seems like it's saying we can't do all this inner work alone, right? We need the support of other people who are on the same journey.
Absolutely. We're constantly being influenced by the people around us, our families, our friends, our communities. They all shape our values and beliefs and how we behave. Just imagine if you surround yourself with people who are working on themselves, who are compassionate and want to make a positive impact. That creates a powerful energy, doesn't it?
It's like that saying, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together. Maybe that's what this article is getting at, that we need each other to build a world that's sustainable and harmonious.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And leads us to the next question. What happens when we go through these five steps? What kind of consciousness emerges? And how does that translate into actual actions that benefit both people and the planet? So we've been talking about how this article is suggesting a shift, you know, moving away from this idea of saving the planet mm-hmm. and more towards cultivating a deeper consciousness within humanity.
Yeah, it's a pretty interesting idea. But what does that even mean? Like, what does this deeper consciousness actually look like? And how does it change anything in the real world? Does the article talk about that?
It does. It suggests that when we start doing these things, the self-reflection, the mindfulness, the spiritual inquiry, we start to develop certain qualities mm-hmm. like compassion, empathy, creativity, love, you know, and ultimately a deep respect for all forms of life. It's like our perspective changes, right? Mm-hmm. We move from this limited self-centered view to one where we see how everything is connected.
So it's not just about feeling good or having some kind of spiritual awakening. It's about those internal changes actually leading to external actions that benefit everyone and everything around us. Can you give me like a real world example of how that might work?
Sure. Let's take consumerism, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine you've been practicing mindfulness and you become more aware of all the advertising, all the pressure to buy stuff all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And as you develop emotional intelligence, you start to see how those marketing tactics are playing on your insecurities and desires.
Mm-hmm.
And then as you cultivate compassion, you begin to think about, you know, the environmental and social impact of the things you're buying.
So instead of just buying whatever, you start making more conscious choices, like buying less, buying local, or supporting companies that are doing things the right way. It's like your internal change is rippling outward, impacting your actions, and ultimately changing the world around you.
Exactly. And that's just one example. Think about applying this deeper consciousness to other problems, like political polarization or trying to resolve conflicts. What if, instead of just attacking people who disagree with us, we tried to understand them? What if our leaders were motivated by compassion and a vision for the future where everyone benefits instead of just looking out for themselves or focusing on short-term gains?
That's a really different way of looking at things. But wouldn't some people say this is all just a fantasy? You know, human nature is selfish, right? And expecting this kind of massive change is unrealistic. What would you say to that?
That's a fair point. I mean, we can't ignore history. There's been a lot of conflict, greed, and destruction. But we also have to remember that humans are capable of amazing change. Think about the end of slavery, the civil rights movement, all the advances in science and technology that have made life better for so many people. These were all things that seemed impossible at one time.
So you're saying that even though it's a huge challenge, it's not impossible. Maybe we're underestimating our own potential to grow and transform. But if this shifting consciousness is so important, how do we actually make it happen on a larger scale? Is it just up to individuals? Or do we need to change our systems too?
That's a big question. And the article doesn't really give us a clear answer. It focuses on individual transformation, but it also hints at the need for wider societal shifts. For example, it talks about fostering a sustainability mindset. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when I hear that, I think about how our economic systems right now, they often prioritize profit over people and the planet. If we really want to live in a sustainable world, doesn't that mean we need to rethink how those systems work? It's not enough for individuals to make good choices if the system is set up to reward unsustainable practices.
I completely agree. Individual actions are important, but they can only take us so far. We need systemic change, too.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine a world where our education system teaches emotional intelligence and empathy alongside academics, where our political systems encourage long-term thinking and cooperation instead of short-term gains and partisan fighting, where businesses are judged not just by their profits, but also by their social and environmental impact.
I mean, that would be a huge change from how things are now. Do you really think it's possible to transform our institutions that much?
It would definitely be a massive undertaking. But think about it. The systems we have today were created by humans, right?
Mm.
So if we created them, we can also change them. It requires a collective effort. We need a shift in consciousness, not just individually, but also as a society. We need to realize that our institutions are a reflection of our values. And if we want a better world, we need to change those values at their core.
So it's not one or the other. We need both individual and systemic change to happen together. But let's be real, change on this scale doesn't happen overnight. Where do we even begin? What are the most effective ways to start this transformation?
And that's where things get really interesting. I think this is where you, the listener, come in. The article has given us a framework, but it's up to each of us to figure out how to put these ideas into practice in our own lives and in our communities.
It's like the article is a map, and we have to choose our own path and navigate the terrain.
Exactly. And that path is going to look different for everyone. For some people, it might mean deepening their own spiritual practice or committing to living more sustainably. For others, it might mean getting involved in activism, advocating for policy changes, or promoting education that teaches empathy and critical thinking.
And this leads us to the last part of the article, where they talk about this relatively new thing called eco-anxiety. They describe it as a phobia that's emerging, especially among young people who are really worried about the future of the planet. What did you think about that section?
Though what struck me is that they presented eco-anxiety not as a weakness, but as a potential force for change. They suggest that these feelings of anxiety and fear are a natural response to the very real threats that our planet is facing.
It makes me think of that quote, "The only way to overcome fear is to become a little bit dangerous yourself." Maybe that's what the article is getting at, that this eco-anxiety, instead of paralyzing us, can actually fuel our determination to create a better future.
Yeah, it's a powerful way to reframe it. Instead of seeing anxiety as the problem, we can see it as a source of energy and motivation. But the big question is, how do we use that energy effectively? How do we go from feeling afraid and hopeless to feeling hopeful and taking action?
So we're back. We've spent this deep dive talking about this idea that maybe it's not so much about saving the planet, but more about humanity, you know, saving ourselves from ourselves. And we were talking about eco-anxiety, especially among younger people.
Yeah, and we left off with that question of how we move past the fear and the doom and gloom and start feeling hopeful and taking action. It's a big one, especially for people who are dealing with that eco-anxiety.
The article didn't really give us any specific advice for dealing with eco-anxiety, did it?
No, it didn't go into like therapy or coping strategies or anything like that, but I think there's still a lot we can learn from it.
Okay, I'm curious. What do you see as the connection between what the article's talking about and dealing with eco-anxiety?
Well, remember how the article emphasizes self-awareness, emotional intelligence, and spiritual inquiry as ways to reach that deeper consciousness?
Yeah.
Those practices can actually be super helpful for dealing with eco-anxiety.
Really? Can you explain how that works? Like, how does something like mindfulness help someone who's freaking out about climate change?
Okay, imagine you're constantly hearing about, you know, the ice caps melting and crazy weather and all these predictions about how bad things are going to get. It's easy to feel overwhelmed and helpless.
Oh, yeah, I've definitely been there. You feel like the problem is just so massive and anything you do is just a tiny drop in the ocean.
Exactly. But that's where mindfulness comes in. When you practice mindfulness, you learn to observe those feelings of anxiety without getting caught up in them.
So you're not letting the anxiety control you, you're just observing it.
Yeah, you're creating space between the feeling and your reaction to it. And from that place of awareness, you can start asking yourself, okay, what can I actually do in my own little corner of the world to make a difference? What actions are going to make me feel like I'm actually doing something meaningful?
It's like shifting from being passive and afraid to being active and empowered. You're not just a victim anymore, you're someone who can create change.
Exactly. And as you start taking action, even small actions, it helps to chip away at that feeling of helplessness. You start to feel like you have some control again.
It's like that quote, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has."
That's a perfect example. The article isn't saying we need these huge, sweeping solutions. It's more about starting with ourselves, working on our own inner world, and letting that guide our actions.
And maybe as more people start doing that, all those little ripples of change will eventually come together and create a bigger wave.
That's the hope, right? That by focusing on our own personal growth, we can contribute to a collective shift that will create a more sustainable and harmonious world.
The article uses the term sustainability mindset. What do you think that means in a practical sense?
To me, a sustainability mindset means understanding that what we do has an impact not just on us, but on everyone and everything, both now and in the future. It's about making choices that take into account the well-being of future generations and the whole planet.
So it's bigger than just recycling or reducing our carbon footprint. It's a completely different way of thinking about our place in the world.
Right. It's about questioning our assumptions, challenging the way things are, and looking for solutions that work for both people and the planet. It's about moving away from this idea of scarcity and competition and embracing abundance and cooperation.
Well, this deep dive has definitely given us a lot to consider. We've explored this idea that maybe the Earth doesn't need saving in the way we usually think about it, but that humanity needs to do some serious self-reflection and change course.
We've talked about consciousness, the possibility of transformation, and the connection between all the big issues we're facing, environmental, social, economic. And we've looked at the importance of inner work and spiritual growth in building a future that's both sustainable and harmonious.
It's been a really interesting journey. And as we wrap up, we want to leave you with one final thought.
If you imagine a world where both humanity and the planet are thriving, where do you fit in? What role do you want to play in creating that world? What seeds of change are you going to plant today?